Hello and welcome to the seventh episode of On the Pod, My Lord. I'm James Rushton. I'm joined by Adam Clark and Ellie Sanford. How are you both doing, guys?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Good to be here on the pod again for our season preview.
Yeah, I'm doing all right as well. Looking forward to getting things started on Sunday.
Yeah, it's come around so quick, but yeah. We haven't had a lot of season preview type stuff on a 7500 hole yet. So what we thought we'd do is we'll get together, have a chat and kind of sum up the entire, well, sum up what we think this will happen in this season, really. A lot's happened in the off season. Villa have been bought. We've changed kits. We've had a brand change. It's a bit too much, to be honest. So let's start off. What happened last time on Aston Villa? Previously on Aston Villa, we actually finished bottom of the league. We were relegated. We were still owned by Randy Lerner, who scarpered, sold the club off. We finished with 17 points and everyone expected a bit of a clear out, which hasn't really happened, has it, guys?
No, but that's probably not a bad thing, because even though it was really disjointed last season, there was probably still more chemistry in the squad than if we got rid of everyone and brought in 20 new strangers, you get me?
Yeah, I thought we was going to sack off Lescott, sack off Richards, get rid of maybe Hill, Veretout, just change the squad. Only a few of those moves have come about. It doesn't look as though we're dropping to the depths of Paul Lambert's bomb squad, but it looks like certain players are unfavoured as we head towards a new season, and some people we just can't get rid of. The squad looks to be the same shape as last year, which, Adam, does that worry you at all?
Does a little bit, yeah. I mean, I know it's not so much about the players. You know, I'm probably one of the few people who will even go as far as defending Jolyon Lescott. No, for me, Gabby, Mika Richards, those two are right out. What does worry me is I'm not sure what we're looking at tactically yet. We're not seeing a really clear plan coming in to overtake what we did last season. So that's a bit more the worry. I don't mind necessarily the personnel, but I would like to see them taking more of a shape.
Yeah, last season, catastrophe would be an understatement, I feel. But I don't think we all expected that in the round tables we did last season. I think we was aiming a bit higher than relegation. But Arthur Ellis, who joins us today, has put a bit of a shift in this week, and he's interviewed everyone from 7500 to Holt about their expectations for this year. How did you manage it, Ellis? How did you do it?
I just asked around, I guess.
It's certainly a shift in when I looked at the editorial and saw, you know, that you'd scheduled, what, 5-6 pieces for this week, all to do with our thoughts. I mean, there's a lot of reading there, so fair play.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff to come out. It should come out around lunchtime each day this week, and everyone is very optimistic on our site for the most part, which is good. But then last season, everyone was optimistic on the site too. And last season.
Didn't turn out very well, did it? No.
Any
memorable? Yeah, exactly. Only up from here. So any memorable answers from the first two snippets of the round table so far, Ellis? Or anything that really stood out to you?
What did stand out to me is that Arrow Matt Villain has a lot of optimism in a certain Gabby Abonglor this season.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm not sure if
I'd like to think he's not for real, because gets a great man.
But
for the most part, it looks like everyone seems to expect us to be up there at the end of the season, which is possible, but I feel I've personally decided to rein in my expectations after last season.
Yeah, so I think we're all a bit used to that kind of stuff, kind of tempering expectations.
I mean, so this is the key question. Is anything less than promotion a disappointment?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a very competitive league. It's a very open league. It's a fast and furious league. People end where they deserve in the championship. It's not like the Premier League. Magic happens in the Premier League. I feel like the Championship's a very realistic league. What do you guys think?
It's a grind. I think it's a grind. It's a long, long season. But I mean, to answer my own question there, I mean, I think, yeah, absolutely, anything less than promotion, I think, probably is a disaster. to be honest, because it just so high increases the chances that we're going to stay down there. And if you don't get out in those first two seasons down in the Championship, you could be in for a long, long spell.
And yourself, Ellis, is promotion anything less than promotion a disaster?
I think if we finish in the top half, it's not a disaster. Obviously, promotion is ideal. Not promotion is not ideal. But if we can give ourselves something to build on for next season without going up, I don't see it as being a bad thing theoretically. Like, we just need to manage our expectations a little bit, I think.
Reining in. It's all about tempering expectations as a Villa fan. We've had the heavy heights of a Europa League, and now we've been relegated. Now we're in the Championship. The two men that will hopefully lead Villa out of the Championship are Roberto Di Matteo and Steve Clarke. Adam, what do you feel about these two?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy about them. Roberto Di Matteo and Steve Clarke, actually, I think both have decent records of leading teams out of the Championship. That's good. Roberto Di Matteo is a Champions League winning manager. So considering the quality of manager that was on offer in the summer, yeah, I'm pretty happy. I'm very especially happy with them as a team. You know, I think they cancel out each other's weaknesses. You know, Steve Clarke, probably an old-fashioned guy, but he's probably going to have a little bit of know-how in the league. Whereas Roberto Di Matteo, you know, probably a more modern guy, got some better ideas about possession football, but we'll have Steve Clarke there to cover up some inexperience.
Yeah, and now Ellis, I remember speaking to you on one of the earlier podcasts we did, and I think it was definitely looking like Nigel Pearson would take over Villa. I'm assuming that Di Matteo is a 100% improvement in your eyes.
At very least 100%. Yeah.
Bottom line. But yeah, man. What do you think about Di Matteo, Ellis? What do you think? Initial impressions, even?
I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm not tactically knowledgeable about stuff. But he just, so far, so good, I reckon. He seems to be making the right moves, saying the right things. He seems to have a good relationship with the new owner. We saw with that press conference they did out in China. So it all appears to be good so far. That's all I can really say on the matter.
Yeah, I feel that he's hands-off in a good way. Tim Sheldon was a bit hands-off in a bad way. When we needed a strict boss, I don't feel he was there. But Roberto Di Matteo seems to let situations develop, and he seems to want to let these players prove themselves, which is why we've still got, you know, a catalogue of players who just didn't perform last season still at the club. Adam, do you think Di Matteo can bring the best out of someone like Gabby Obonghor or Micah Richards?
Yeah, so I know this is what a lot of fans are unhappy about at the moment, which was that the suggestion at the start of the season, or at the start of the transfer window even, was that it was going to be a huge overhaul with Dr. Tony Jurin in charge. And now we're hearing a little bit of talk. I think Di Matteo said that this is a squad to build on, not a squad to completely overhaul. But I think in general, it's a bad idea to assume that you can entirely overhaul your squad and things will just get better. You know, that's a very fan-based perspective. Like, oh man, if we just bought this player and this player and this player, it'd be wonderful. And it never is. Like, it just doesn't work like that. On the other hand, like some of those players, Gabby, Micah Richards, no, I think some of those players are just frankly unrescuable. You know, some of those players should have been offloaded ages ago. So it depends what players we're talking about him building on. And I've got to say, there are some questions raised about the players who've gone out versus the players who've stayed. You know, I think there are genuine worries about that. I think we're going to get around to talking about the players who've gone and the players who've come in a little bit. But at the moment, I understand why fans aren't necessarily super happy. On the other hand, there are some limitations that I think we should talk about as well.
Yeah, Steve Clarke and Di Matteo, I think Villa are in very safe, as safe hands as they could be, to be completely honest. I feel they have made a bit of a steal here with these pair. Moving on to a bit of a different subject. I don't think we've ever talked kits, jerseys or badges on the podcast before, but Villa have had a complete overhaul of their branding. And not only that, they've got some pretty tasty new kits. Guys, what do you think about Under Armour? What do you think about the new style for Villa going forward?
The kits are nice. The kits last season were nice too. So it's not as if we've gone from bad to great. We've gone from good to a little bit better. Under Armour seemed to be a better kit designer than, was it Macron we had last season?
Yeah, Macron.
From what I can gather, the quality's better, and they seem to do a better range of non, like, match kits. Like, they do a better training range as well. So, from what I've seen, it all looks snazzy.
Yeah, what I feel about that, why I bring the Under Armour up as well, is because it just adds a bit of prestige to Aston Villa that just isn't there at the moment. Names like Under Armour, Nike, Adidas, they're top brand makes. When it's on the side, when it's sponsoring your team, it's a little bit of a vain thing to think about. But it certainly feels a lot better that Under Armour are repping Aston Villa, even in this low time that it is. It certainly adds a bit of prestige to the club in my eyes, a bit of bigness, something to be kind of proud about. I mean, I'd rather stuff be good on the pitch, but as long as things are going in the right direction off it.
So long as you're looking snazzy off the field, you don't mind what's going on.
No, I'm not saying that. It's just, I can't put it into words what I'm feeling about it, but it does, as I said, it adds a bit of prestige. It's a right move in terms of finances and Under Armour, their household name, Macron. The kits look good. I've had the pleasure of owning a Macron kit, and I can tell you that the quality isn't good. It's shoddy. Stuff falls off. Stripes fall out. Stitching pops.
You sure that's not just the players, James?
Yeah, pretty much like Aston Villa on the pitch, really. I think Macron's quality kind of matched up with that.
Gabby,
but yeah, anything else to say about Villa's? Yes, fit around his man boobs.
You know, if you can squeeze in all of your fat,
that's just sucking that six pack for a whole 90 minutes. That's what we're talking about. But yeah, Under Armour will really show his vulnerabilities. Shall we say? very tight fit.
No place to hide.
No place to hide. No, those tits, frankly, Gabby, won't do very well in Under Armour, mate. I mean, we've seen the picture of him twisting around in the Macron, and it's not pretty. It wasn't really good.
Wasn't good. I'm looking forward to it. But let's assume that he's going to be fit again this season. And
then he'll look ripped. Yeah, man, it'll really show off. But there's three new guys who will be appearing in this Under Armour kit with this new badge: Piluigi Gallini, Tommy Alphick, and Aaron Tishbola. What do you guys think about this, Adam? I know you've had a lot of fondness for Tishbola, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And so I know a lot of people have been a bit unhappy. I saw one guy who was saying, you know, what we're on about, these guys are under 21s, you know, strange names, never heard of them. I think we've really got to get used to being in the Championship. You know, run down through the transfers that are in the Championship. You know, it's not just, people were fixating slightly on the 50 million figure that we were talking about getting spent. It's not just about the money, it's about persuading players to come to you. You know, I think a lot of fans now are stuck in the mindset, you know, that we're like, you know, it's back in the Premier League, we've got 50 million quid, we can buy who we want. It's just not the case anymore. Anyone who you can buy for big money is probably getting bids as well from Premier League clubs, and you just can't persuade them to come to you. So in that context, in that you've got to persuade them to come to second division, yeah, you know, these guys sort out a problem at the back, you know, they sort out a problem in goal, and they probably sort out a problem in central midfield as well. You know, we picked up, you know, Tshibola was one of the better players last season in the Championship. He was a player who lots of people were looking at. I think he's a good pickup. Pierluigi Gallini, you know, he's looking like a nice pickup as well. You know, we knew that it was a problem position with Guzan. You know, I think it was time for him to go. And Tommy Elphick, you know, I think we could desperately all say that we needed another centre-back. So I'm feeling pretty positive. I'm not saying they're enough on their own, but I'm positive about those three.
Ellis, who out of those three excites you the most?
None of them. But I say that in the best possible way, in that compare these three signings to last summer's. I'm digging myself out of a hole here, by the way. Last summer, we signed a load of individuals who were all creative, good, didn't gel, didn't really work. And I look at these three players and I think they would work as a squad. Like, this seems to be, they're not outstanding, but they all work as a team. So in that sense, they're going to be great signings for us theoretically, because last season we had loads of players that just didn't work well together, and it created a bad feeling in the dressing room as well, from what it appears. So, and if you like look at Shibola's Snapchat, for example,
yeah,
you already see he's set into the club really well. He's getting on with like the likes of Jack Grealish. And if they can like build bonds and get themselves working for each other as well as with each other, they're going to be great signings for us, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, last season's transfer window, I'm pretty sure both of you will agree with me, it looks fantastic in a game like FIFA or Football Manager. Unfortunately, it was more style over substance. I think Villa are one signing away, you know, in terms of an attacking midfielder or a striker, from having a whole new backbone in just four signings. They've got a future really set up here. Man who excites me the most, and I'm a bit worried about, is Pierluigi Gallini. He had the luxury of playing in a league, which it's a good league, Serie A, but it is not as frantic as English football. Not as panicky, I'd say. I think that's a better word to describe it. One thing I've noticed that Gallini does a lot is he parries the ball. He doesn't catch it, he will parry the ball. I can tell you now from experience, as someone who's played Sunday League football in England, that people will always wait for that. As soon as you do that once, it's an unforgivable mistake, and someone will capitalise that, especially in a place like the Championship where poachers thrive. Gallini does worry me. That's why I think Villa are looking at someone like Costel Pantilimon, which kind of I despise. But yeah, Villa's goalkeeping position doesn't look as secure as maybe we think it is. However, yeah, Tommy Alfick... Oh, carry on, Adam. Sorry.
I was just saying that in the last podcast, when we talked about Gallini coming in, I talked about him being a good competition pick with Guzan. That's obviously not the case anymore. Guzan's
that's quite worrying.
So... yeah, I think I would also welcome someone else being brought in to provide some competition in that place. And that Pantilimon link sounded quite good in that respect. It's gone a bit quiet on that front, but we'll see.
Yeah, quite thankfully, I feel.
Yeah, I do agree that we could do with a second goalkeeper, but I don't see the purpose in bringing in Pantilimon, in that if we want a keeper that's not parrying balls out, he's probably not what we want, and that he's not very good with his hands either.
Let's point out also that he's a young guy. He's only 21. You know, that's kind of a thing that can be coached.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, he played in Serie A. It's not as panicky. It's very measured. In the Championship, as there are scrambles in the box. Stuff like that happens. In Serie A, he would be forgiven for parrying a ball to a waiting defender. It simply won't happen in the Championship, and that would be something that will need to be eradicated from his game. Thankfully, he's not like Guzan. He's quite young. But yeah, hopefully the same mistakes won't be made with Guzan. He was quite a young prodigy.
Final thought on goalkeepers. Mark Bunn wasn't that impressive at times last season, but for a Championship keeper, he's not actually a bad second choice. So
no.
We've got Gallini to try out this year. Like, give him game time, see if we can bring him up to speed with English football. And we have a reasonably good keeper to fall back on. And also, Jed Steer, he's got Championship experience if we keep him around. So I don't think we need to be worried about goalkeepers just yet.
Fair enough. Pretty good shout. Aston Villa would want to make some more moves. People who are rumoured to be arriving to Villa in the next day, couple of days, are both Ross McCormack and one Ravel Morrison. Ellis, I think we were both caught out earlier this month when the BBC did report that Aston Villa would in fact not be moving for both these people, but it looks like things are really picking up pace with Ross McCormack. How do you feel about Ross?
Well, I mean, I've got egg on my face if he does sign, so that's not
ideal.
Don't
worry, I'll take the blame for that.
But, yeah, I'm all for it. Sure, he's old. Well, I say old, he's 29, he's not that old. But for a footballer, he's getting to the end. So it's quite a lot of money for a player his age, with adding on the fact that there's not going to be any resale value. But if he can score the goals that get us back up to the Premier League, then it's money well spent, in my opinion.
Adam, does Ross McCormack excite you more than a Gabby Vanderhoof or a Jordan Ayew even?
Yes to the first one, no to the second one. I mean, yeah, Ellis summed up well. He's in normal circumstances, you don't want to be spending that kind of money on a 29-year-old who you're not going to get a lot of sell-on value out of. But when the prize is promotion, and, you know, God knows that figure keeps going up how much promotion is worth every season. Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's worth it. He scored goals in the championship. Every season he's been down in the championship, he scored, you know, well into the double figures in goals. And if he's the guy who gets you it, we need a striker. He's very clearly the best striker who's available in the championship right now. There's absolutely no reason not to go for it. And, you know, if we manage to nick him off of Norwich, all the better.
Yeah, perfect. It's more of a strategic move, I feel. You take him away. You're not only taking him away from Fulham and bringing him to Villa where he can score goals and get wins. You're taking wins away from Norwich there. You're taking goals away from Norwich, which is it's a real bonus. In terms of people who are leaving Aston Villa, though, Carlos Hill, I know he's a favourite of yours, Adam. A bit upset there.
Oh, man. I'm distraught. I'm in tears. It's so difficult. Yeah. It's so difficult because... It's hard to deny the arguments that are made about Hill. You know, he's too lightweight, he doesn't do enough in defence, he's an output, you know, in terms of assists, etc., isn't really enough. But I just feel like, you know, you took him in from La Liga, he's a young guy, you know, totally different style of football, and you put him under Tim Sherwood. You know, it's like, yeah. I don't know, it's like putting your kitten in a washing machine. You know, it's... And then you criticise
him because the kitten does die during that, Adam. The kitten doesn't live.
You criticise him because he walks funny afterwards. Like, you know, couldn't we just have spent a bit more time with him? David Silva didn't have a good first season when he was at Man City. Not necessarily suggesting, and actually, objectively, the figures that he put in when he was in La Liga also suggest that his output was not going to be, you know, super high. But yeah, it's pretty gutting to me. But I hope that Jack Grealish, you know, hopefully it'll give him the space to step up into that attacking playmaker role. And, you know, he's only gone out on loan, hasn't he, to Deportivo?
Yeah. If he does
light the world on fire back in La Liga, you know, we can bring him over. And, you know, I was a bit disappointed because I thought Roberto Di Matteo might be the kind of manager who might look at his qualities a little, you know, and think, oh, this is a guy I can use.
Yeah, I think Villa's hand may have been a bit forced. They do need to lighten up the wage bill a bit. If people aren't coming in for people like Micah Richards or Julian Lescott, unfortunately, I think the cuts need to be made where they are, where the offers come in. And if an offer comes in for Carlos Hill, maybe you've just got to accept it, even if it is a loan. Maybe you've just got to, you know, take that option when it comes in.
I also think he wanted to go. You know, it was quite clear he wanted to head back to Spain. So, you know, you don't want to keep him there against his will.
He wasn't a bad footballer. And in opposition to the argument that he wouldn't fit in a physical league like the Championship, I feel his best match for us, where he didn't score, or those amazing goals against Sunderland and Bournemouth, his best match was against West Brom, where they targeted him and kind of kicked the shit out of him, but he stood a resolute figure and managed to have an impact on the match. Even though it came out to a 0-0, I feel it was very creative in that match and actually made a lot of chances that Villa just couldn't put away. Ellis, I feel like Carlos Hill has become a bit of a Villa cult hero.
Yeah, I guess. I wasn't ever a huge fan. I don't get me wrong, he was a great player, but he never really seemed to fit in the system. And sure, we maybe could have done with keeping him for another season to see if we could get performances out of him. But if he wanted to go, that's fair play to him for going. And if he does well on loan, we theoretically can get more money for him next summer. Because I can't imagine that if he goes and lights the league on fire, he'll want to come back to Birmingham. No offence to the city.
Yeah. how nice would it be if we'd actually written in a proper sell-on clause? You know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Talking of clauses, I don't feel like we'll miss Carlos Hill as much as we're going to miss Idrissa Gana.
Oh, yeah. Nowhere near as much.
Yeah.
Theoretically, he's easily replaceable, but we all know that things that are easier in your head don't work out for Villa. We're going to miss Gana a lot, and he's going to shine at Everton. And Everton, who are building a damn strong team, I will add, under a good manager, Idrissa Gana is going to shine this year, and I would be very surprised if he isn't at a top European club in the next 3 or 4 years if Everton don't get there themselves.
Yeah, it's not so much us not replacing him, but just how much I think he would have crushed the Championship.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, I know there are parts of the Villa fan base that are just writing off everyone who write off Gana as well as a headless chicken. Look, you do not put up the statistics that he put in terms of tackles and interceptions, second only to N'Golo Kante in the Premier League last season, without doing something right.
Yeah, I feel that he fails the eye test is a problem. If you focus on Idrissa Gana, what you may see sometimes is a player who is playing his own game. I can tell you now that maybe some of the best players in the world don't always look good doing what they're doing. Even some of the worst players, Ricardo Montolivo for AC Milan in Serie A. He kind of stumbles around. He does his own thing. He's not the best player, but he can lay off a pass. When the game comes to him, he can perform. And that was very much the same with Idrissa Gana. When the game revolved around him, he'll shine. I feel Villa fans, he's maybe singled out for a bit of unfair criticism. But Ellis, I think Gana shined, and you're right, we'll miss him.
Yeah, and I think part of the criticism was that he did give the ball away a lot. But unlike quite a few of the other players that gave the ball away a lot, he gave the ball away trying to create chances rather than just shit passes sideways. So I think creatively, yeah, he was a good option for us. It's just he didn't quite gel with some of the players around him. Whether or not that was language barrier, lack of time with each other. But it's one of those things that maybe given another season, and especially in a lower league, he would have bossed it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and one of his... I will praise him on the fact that when he gave the ball away, he would get it back most of the time. Let's not forget that. And he'd throw in some quite crunching tackles in the midfield, tackles that Villa might miss this season without that physicality in the middle of the park. Another person who's left this year, beginning with a G, is Brad Guzan. Guys, what do you think?
I really don't know.
Like, you've got some. I know you've had some strong words, Adam, about Brad Guzan, especially against that Swansea game. I think there was a few F-bombs thrown in.
I mean, he's been repeatedly subpar for a couple of seasons now. I've got to admit, I'm a bit surprised that Middlesbrough went in for him. Look, it's a bit strange because, you know, he had that one good season, 2012-2013. He was voted our player of the year. You know, he looked good. You know, he's probably our only like top international player. Sorry to all the Americans, to our editor Robert Lintott and Jack Grimsey, our American writer. Pity you guys that he is the US first choice. But nah, perfectly happy to see the back of him.
Yeah, he was amazing when we actually released him and Lambert brought him back, and for that one or two seasons he was incredible. His mind simply isn't at Aston Villa anymore. It's focused on what he wants to do. What he wants to do is play well for the US men's national team, as well as maybe shine at Middlesbrough. But unfortunately, I don't think he's going to get many games with Victor Valdez there. Brad Guzan, certainly enigma. I think some of the criticism he comes in is quite harsh. It's only recently where he's kind of fell off the face of the earth and done terribly. But another player that's going that I am very unhappy about is Kieran Clark. And I mean, he's having a medical today at Newcastle. That's pretty much gone. Right, guys?
It's sad to see him go in the sense that he's Villa through and through, and that he's been there all his career. But he's completely replaceable. He's nothing special. He's good on his day. His day isn't that often. He's quite error prone. He doesn't seem to have a calm head. And if he goes to Newcastle and costs them a couple of points, sod it. That's not bad for us.
Yeah, Adam, you made me see sense yesterday. I was in a bit of a pickle. I was a bit upset. You made me see sense.
It's a bit of an odd move. And in a way, I think it's a transfer that's bad for both parties, which is quite impressive.
Yeah.
In that, From our perspective, yeah, Clark, you know, he's not reliable. And we've had him for a couple of seasons now, and we've always thought, maybe. But there's a reason he hasn't been, staking a place, all the time. on the other hand, we do lose a player, you know, and we're not sure that we've got a whole lot of depth or backup in that centre-back position. On the other hand, Newcastle have just paid £5 million for a guy who probably, he shouldn't start for them. And so this was something I wanted to talk about, which is the difference between a good championship player and a championship-winning player. Kieran Clarke is probably a good championship defender. He's not a win-you-the-league championship defender, and that's got to be what Newcastle are aiming for. So if he's not going to be that, he's not going to be a starter. They've paid £5 million for a guy who's a one-season backup on the assumption that they get back to the Premier League.
Yeah.
That's a really weird move. Why don't you pay £5 million for a guy who's only going to be there, who's only going to be useful for you for one season, and even then might not be that useful for you?
It's very sideways, but then you could argue that if he does go, if they do get promoted straight away and he becomes a squad player, they have a lot of foreign players, and if they get back to the Prem, they will need a certain number of homegrown players, I think.
Ah, oh, so don't tell me you're a believer in that. Homegrown players are automatically better.
No, I'm just saying that you need them in the Premier League, don't you? You need minimum 8 British players.
You're not wrong. You aren't wrong.
Mika Richards, Jolyon Lescott, Gabby Agonwanahor.
Oh, yeah, we're set when we go back. Newcastle have a lot of French players and stuff.
Yeah. I feel like it's a very strategic move by Newcastle to bolster the homegrown ranks, because it is stuff that Manchester City have done. It's stuff that teams that rely on foreign imports even, they do have to meet that quota, unfortunately. And that quota does...
It is disappointing you had that release clause of 5 million. I know you had keen words about this, James.
That pissed me off. Yeah, that really did piss me off. And I'll tell you why it pissed me off, because... If Tom Fox thought it was a good idea to insert clauses into the contract of every Aston Villa player, what he's done is open up the entire market to tearing open Aston Villa. Villa survived a few years ago by not having clauses in the contracts of people like Gareth Barry and Stuart Downing. It means they could name their price and hold them out to the contract. With having a release clause as low as 5 million of a depth player, albeit, you can't lose people like that. You can't just lose everyone because, you know, that's how you signed the contract. It's very, very strange, I feel. Very strange.
Question. Does Jordan Ayew have a release clause? Because
I bloody fucking hope not, seriously, guys. I am done with release clauses because Aston Villa haven't done them competently at all. There's a difference between a minimum fee release clause and a relegation release clause. Christian Benteke's clause was £32 million. A clause is meant to be absurdly high, so you don't lose these players. It's a last gasp move. Villa's clauses have set at bang average prices, which strikes me as an incredibly strange move.
Yeah, it's an odd one. I mean, though, to be fair, let's point out that, you know, clauses are on both sides of a negotiation. You know, presumably that was inserted as, you know, because his last contract was signed, I think, 2016, if not last year. So presumably that was put in as a come and get me to Premier League teams. It's just a bit galling that it's not Premier League teams picked it up. It's Newcastle.
Yeah, the clause is a weird one because, you know, it's allowed. Newcastle may not have made it. Tony Shaw's Twitter feed points it out to me that this move wasn't made as a let's buy Kieran Clarke because he's good move. It points it out to me as let's buy Kieran Clarke so Villa won't have him move, which is downright fair. It's strategic. Well, it hurts that Kieran Clarke is going to Newcastle. It hurts that Villa have allowed them to be themselves to be in a situation where they're selling to promotion rivals, and that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean,
even if it is Kieran Clarke,
I think we've got to stop comparing ourselves to Newcastle in this moment. I know it's painful, and I know look, the Matt Ritchie one. You know, Matt Ritchie that's a hell of a signing. Dwight Gayle, I don't know. You know, some of our fans seem to be very jealous of a Dwight Gayle signing. Really? You know, if we get Ross McCormack, I'm much happier with that than I would be with Gale. But anyway, they've spent what is it, 33 million, I'm reading at the moment, that they spent this transfer window.
Yeah.
I know it's galling that we've not spent similar amounts of money. It's also worth pointing out that they have sold Wijnaldum for 28 million and Townsend for 13 million this season. So that, I think they've made more money in transfers than they've spent. But if you compare us, for example, to other teams, so if we do hijack this Norwich move for McCormack, well, then their one big move of the summer was Serge Ikanios, who was Liverpool under-23 player, who never really got a run out for them, 19-year-old winger. That's their big signing.
Yeah.
You know, apart from, hey, Ricky van Wolfswinkel's coming back on loan. Hey, celebrate all you Norwich fans. You know, and they've lost Brett and Nathan
Redmond. Could be his year.
You know, and then other players, you know, we're looking at other teams who are looking to come up with us. Well, Brighton, you know, they came in fourth last season, I think. They've got Steve Sedwell coming in on a free transfer. Now, you know, I love Stevie as much as the next guy. He's also 33 now.
You know? I thought he was still 19. Like, he's just existed forever in my mind. Like, just the same bloke.
I'm not sure he should.
Bloody hell, I remember.
It's a bit odd to make him the linchpin of your promotion push, you know, and they've got Glenn Murray coming in on loan from Bournemouth. Okay, fine. You know, and then other teams, Derby have signed no one who you would be able to name. You know, and then another side who probably should be looking, you know, who would be hoping to get promoted this season. So compared to, you know, every other rival around us, except for Newcastle, our transfer business doesn't look that bad.
Yeah, one issue is anyone who Aston Villa and the Championship promotion rivals will target presumably will be chased by a Premier League club, so they've got to wait in line. More shame if you're a Derby team who has to then wait behind Aston Villa and Newcastle in the pecking order, because then you haven't really got a chance, have you? You've got to really target unique prospects. Moving on from sales and transfers, Villa's owner Tony Shaw, we might be in for a bit of a year in terms of Twitter. Guys, what do you think? the mass cringe tells it all. But Adam, go first, mate. I know you've been dying to say something.
Well, yeah, so if everyone missed the highlight was his blow up at Ian Holloway. In the words of Tony Gia, failed player, failed manager, and then an F something star ED pundit, which, I don't know, do we think that was failed as well? I assume that was, let's say that was failed as well. That was because he predicted us as being 16th. So this achieved the estimable thing of being both completely correct and also just incredibly controversial. You can't go around saying that kind of thing. You can't go around exploding on social media as the owner of the football club. Because at the moment,
yeah, some people have got really upset about it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, embarrassing isn't the word I'd use. I'd use the terms hilarious and oh God.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go far as embarrassing because Aston Villa did. I've seen enough Aston Villa games to know the definition of embarrassing, and that was not much near. But I don't, yeah, an owner shouldn't be doing it. Adam, it is hilarious.
All right, I advise anyone to go check out what Alex Carson wrote on the site, 7500 to Holt, about this because it was very clear headed. But the point is, it's funny when it's at Ian Holloway. It's not going to be funny when it's at Villa fans or when it's at journalists who cover Villa who criticise what's going on the pitch and he explodes at them, and then you're going to see some problems. So,
yeah, Tony Shaw is a smart man. Unfortunately, his English isn't very good, and I can see a situation arising in which he may be accidentally seen as a racist or even worse, say words that shouldn't be said. It'd be a very easy trap to fall to, including the fact that he has already retweeted a picture of Jimmy Savile. please Google Wikipedia if you're not sure who that is, and then you'll realise why that's a fucking disaster. But yeah, at least he retweeted a picture of Jimmy Savile. He told Ian Holloway he's a fucked pundit, I believe. Is it fucked or failed? I don't know.
Well, aside from the Jimmy Savile one, I don't think he's crossed the line yet. Because, I mean, the Ian Holloway one, I can justify in that he's not wrong. But there is, as you said, the risk that he could cross the line. And
it's a very easy line for him to cross.
And I think,
you've got to remember, he's already tweeted a picture of Chairman Mao. So, yeah, who's quite a controversial figure. That's to say the least. I mean, this isn't a place of political discussion on the pod, but I mean, Google Chairman Mao and maybe the Cultural Revolution in China, and you'll see why that might be a bad idea to retweet pictures of a dear leader. But guys, yeah, he's very close to crossing a line that, frankly, with the Daily Mail lurking around, you don't want to cross.
Yeah, I think he needs to find a balance, because we've just gone from having an owner that hasn't communicated with the fans in years to having an owner that's communicating too much, too loudly, and too strongly, perhaps. So
yeah, it's a bit wild. It needs to be trimmed. Groomed.
I guess this is new for us, but then this is a whole new world for him too. So I guess hopefully you'll start getting used to how running a football club works. You might settle down a bit, hopefully, anyway.
Yeah, I just want a silent man with a big briefcase full of money, to be honest.
I think that's what Chris Samuelson wanted at Reading and Everton, but it never actually materialised.
Didn't get his briefcase of money.
But no. But yeah, Chris Samuelson's actually in India buying a few football clubs. Tony Shah, yeah, I mean, this is it's a tool for good. We can see for the first time into our beloved football club. It's not forget that Randy Lerner loved Aston Villa lots, and he did want it to succeed and ended up smothering it in his death grip. Where he actually never turned up, so I find it hard to believe he loved it, but that's what I know he loved it. That letter that he left stunk of love.
Didn't he have a tattoo of the club logo on his ankle as well? That's commitment, to be fair.
Yeah. Randy Lerner loved Aston Villa. He just wasn't able to see it through. Tony Shah comes in maybe loving Aston Villa, but he's very passionate about his respect for the club and what he thinks we'll achieve. He was mentioning Stan Petrov and I think it's Weibo, the Chinese social network. Yeah. He was mentioning Stan Petrov months before he bought Aston Villa, which is a good sign. But yeah, just rein it in a bit. You sound a bit like some of the crazy hashtag AVFC fans that we can see mentioning various conspiracy theories about Shah and Riley and Lerner and the running of Villa. But yeah, it's a force for good. I think that's all we can say about Shah. Hopefully it works out that way.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
It's on Sunday. It's time. Sorry, Adam. Carry on.
No, I was just saying that, you know, if we thought that the club was, you know, going to have a couple of boring years down in the Championship, I think we might find that it's interesting this year. And, you know, let's hope that's a good way. May you live in interesting times is the classic Chinese curse.
And, wow, Aston Villa have got an interesting season ahead. I believe it's 42 games. There's midweek games. It's a packed schedule. There's a lot that's not on TV or won't be publicised. So you've got to keep an ear to the ground and really do some research this season to find out the Villa results. But the season ahead, it starts on Sunday against Sheffield Wednesday. Guys, this season, who's the Villa player to watch, to look out for?
I think that was a question that's coming up on the round table later this week. I think I know it is. So I'm just going to spoil my own answer and say Jack Grealish. It's now or never, kid.
I won't be the main player. We'll be able to disagree with you there.
We need him to set up the goals and against opposition that aren't as good as they were last season. And without having been hindered in a way by having him and Carlos Hill in the team, it didn't work having both of them as creative outlets. But with just Grealish, there's no knowing what he could theoretically achieve this year. And we're going to need him to if we want to go back up, I think.
Adam, will you agree Grealish is the one to watch?
Yeah, I think Grealish is the obvious one. You know, I think he's got everything that it could be to be a complete, absolute star in the Championship this season. Now, I think someone made a good point that I saw, which is that if you said at the start of the season, you know, you're going to get to keep, or at the start transfer window, that you'll get to keep IU, Amavi and Grealish, you know, that's a star Championship lineup just there. So I'm going to say, I'm not going to spoil my answer for the round table. People have to go read my answer on the round table. They're going to give a slightly different answer. Yeah, Amavi. You know, as long as we can get him back. It looks like at the moment the talk has quieted down of people swooping in for him. He's made some positive noises about wanting to make his mark at Villa. And, you know, what we've seen was hugely promising from him. So really looking forward to his development.
Yeah, Jordan Amavi is probably clashing with Joe Bennett for a left-back space as he endures a rehabilitation from a quite crushing injury. Ali Sissoko, yeah, forgotten man. He was pretty good. Oh, I don't know if he was good on Sunday, but he crossed the ball in, which is more than I've seen from him in a while. Crossed a few balls in, actually, pretty good. Everybody just said couldn't get his head on them, or was absent at the time. Guys, this season, I'm not sure if you got a fixture list up, but match you're most excited for?
I don't need a fixture list. For me, it's Villa versus Cardiff, personally, because I do love a bit of Wales versus England. Even though I will be supporting Villa, despite them being the English side of it, it could be a good match, and it used to be the most local fixture for me. So, long-standing enjoyment of that game will continue this year.
Adam, what about yourself?
Well, I'm looking forward to my own local fixture, which is Villa Ipswich this season, which is it's going to be the closest I've seen Villa for a long while down here in
the Chatter Boys.
Absolutely, I might even go as far as Norwich to see him play as well, which could be interesting.
They aren't far away. They aren't far away.
Interesting, you know. Let's say it's going to be fun watching us play Burton Albion. You know, it's just that might not be a match that Villa fans ever expected or wanted to play, but now that we're there, let's go out and enjoy it.
Burton Albion's my one as well. Right up the road, peaceful little Burton up in Trent. We'll be descended on by a horde of angry Villa fans. There's probably more of Aston Villa fans that can fit in the town of Burton even. It's not a city, is it? But Burton Albion's, we're looking forward to that one. Certainly I'm. That's my most match to look forward to. And obviously there's a second city derby going over to Small Heath to play Birmingham City on their turf. For the first time in a long time. So yeah, the championship is building up to be an exciting season. Final question, guys, let's wrap it up. Where will Villa finish specifically?
Man, you're spoiling all the questions on my round
You
table,
can change your answer. You can change your answer.
I'm sticking with eighth. I can't see us finishing as well as I think everyone wants us to finish. I mean, we signed Ross McCormack, we signed maybe one or two other players, my answer might change. As it stands, I think we need to be prepared with the fact that we're going to win games, that we're going to win more than three games this season, touch wood. But I think it's not actually going to be as easy as we all hope. So there's going to be defeats. I don't think Sunday's game is going to be an easy one. I can't actually see us beating Wednesday away. But things could change because it's going to be an unpredictable season. So eighth, but could go higher or lower.
Yeah, I won't spoil my answer, but I'm hoping for at least second. You know, Villa have the firepower, especially if they bring in McCormack to do magical things this year, especially if Grealish gets his ties his shoelaces up and be the player we know he can be, almost like a Zinedine Zidane type of quality for the championship. But yeah, it'd be really good to see a creative player with two destructive strikers in front of him rip up the championship. And I've got a season ticket, and you know, I really want to see some goals this year, because I saw about four last year. I think I can count the amount of goals that I saw on both my hands. So not looking forward to a repeat of last year. All I want is some goals and some wins. And some happiness. Adam?
Yeah, it might take us a little bit of time to get rolling, but you know, I'm going to give a second. You know, we've got quality players, we've got players who should be able to, you know, get us easy wins in this league. I think we will spend a little bit more money before the end of the transfer window. Fingers crossed for the McCormack deal. Yeah, we're going to cruise in second behind Newcastle, unfortunately. That'd be hilarious. If we were the ones who kept them down. So,
best highlight of my season last year was partying as Newcastle fans cried on the streets of Birmingham as I realised that their fate had been sealed once again by Aston Villa FC. Guys, I think it's time to wrap it up there. We've pretty much talked a lot about the coming season. We'll have to see how it unfolds. I think we'll be speaking again about the season, maybe in January to wrap up a transfer window. But next time, I think we'll be bringing you something special. I'll keep it under wraps for now and plan something out. But guys, I think we've got something special to bring in the coming months on the pod, my lord. Speaking of special, you can apply to be a writer with me, Adam and Ellis, on a 7500 Holt. We're trying to offer a platform for good writers. So yeah, get involved. You can be one part of what I believe to be the best Aston Villa site on the internet. One of the comments we've already received in the application, it seems like a family from the outside, and yeah, can't agree more. So yeah, guys, we'll be back with On The Pod episode 8. Any final thoughts?
Just, you know, if you are interested in seeing what we're like, it's only 500 help. You know, do start off by following us. Not just to get our Twitter numbers up, you'll actually see what we're like. So I think
might learn a thing or two from yourself.
We're,
as well,
at
Adam.
JMO Rushton, at Adam Clarkers, yep, and at It's Ellis, I believe.
Yep. It's underscore it's Ellis. That's the one. I always get caught out.
Is that someone take at It's Ellis?
I don't know. I never checked. I just like a good underscore, quite frankly.
But yeah, it's a great team. And,
perfect stuff, guys.
We'd love to be working with other great writers and other great fans of Villa.
Yeah, guys, we'll be back in September with something special. Until then, keep it 7500 Holt. For me, James Rushton, Adam Clark, and Ellis Sanford, it's been episode 7. It's been a pleasure. We'll catch you later. Bye, guys.